I am so happy that I can talk to both of you about Monarch Legacy of Monsters. I didn't know what to expect with this show. I have seen the first four episodes, and I am hooked. It is fantastic. But what I love from the soundscape and your perspectives are the layers of sound that we have, the differentials, and also there's a different quality with the different eras. And I'm picking up different sonic notes when we're back in the past, whether being in the present. And I find it very fascinating. But the most striking part of the sound design and the edit here are the layers of sound. We start with episode one, and we've got the battle. We have G-Day and the Titan monsters in Japan. And you come out of the box, guns blazing with that one. I was beyond impressed, and it's the sound that drew me into this series.
That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah, that is our goal. That's our job.
The sound is what really caught my attention from the opening of this and the first G-Day in episode one. So I'm curious for both of you, because, I mean, I know your work. Benjamin, I'm dying to see Ferrari. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm dying to see it and hear it with those engines going. But where do you start with a project like Monarch and the way we're vacillating between eras, the geographic areas, everything presents its own sonic elements. Alaska, we have wind, we have torrential rains, we have soft rains when we're walking through Japan. You know, where do you actually start your sound plan for Monarch?
I started with the script. That gave me a clue as to what we were going to need. And then, we could gather the different sounds that we were going to need for the show. We actually hired a field recordist that did a couple of days of recording in Japan, in Tokyo, for us, so that we'd have some really authentic Japanese Tokyo location sounds to use in the cut. Obviously, getting early ideas and feedback for the creature designs was important, because that was an ever-evolving part of the project. As far as the different period things, some of the things we did is we recorded a Bolex film camera for some of the camera POV and the camera interactions that Billy had in the first couple episodes. So there's some cool opportunities that just things that we normally don't typically get to do with a television show that we were able to do for this one that were, I think were beneficial.
How far in advance do you get to, for each episode, do you get to plan out your soundscape?
I actually start pretty early on. I start a lot earlier than most people would in a typical TV kind of schedule. I started, designing some sounds, when they're first putting, episodes together for directors. So when they're putting the director's cut together, and then, that would evolve too. So as the editors needed sounds, particular sounds for an episode, I could build things specifically for them that they were in need of. So a lot of the material that we're creating beforehand just carried all the way with the project from the beginning all the way to the end.
Mm-hmm. Now, what point did you get to come into this lovely adventure, Brandon?
Ben's the one that put me on this team, and he's the one that's got the relationship with Chris Black, and I jumped at the opportunity, so I'm very thankful for that. I came in pretty early on with the thought process of it. Ben's obviously the maestro with the creatures, lot of a sense of feeling and that kind of stuff. So, you know, as much as we were in conversation very early on, I came in much later. You spoke about episode one, like that's Matt Shacklin directed that, and he and Nona Kadai, his picture editor, are very detailed people. So Chris Black gives his direction, and then these guys took it over and ran with it because they just have a sense of detail that is their own. And so, for example, with episode one, I got involved, and a lot, like, their sound build was really good. Yeah, but that being said, Ben providing the big moments, the D-Day moments and that kind of stuff, which was ever-evolving because visual effects sometimes make you recreate that, rewrite that,
mm-hmm.
go through a number of iterations. But it was very, very early on, and we did shoot ADR very early on for those episodes one and two because it was laying out the groundwork for the 10-episode series. So we actually started pretty early on.
Yeah, you do, in episodes one and two, you really do lay the groundwork well, and we get a great sense of the different regions and eras that we're dealing with. I really love that, so that we're not caught off guard, and we get to episode three, and we can all just enjoy the fact that Kurt Russell is on screen.
Yeah, he's easy to watch on camera, that's for sure.
You know, he's so engaging. So engaging on screen.
In real life, like he is invested in this project so much. It's great.
Every project he does, he gets so invested in. And I think it's fantastic. But now, once you have your basic concept in there, obviously, you said, Benjamin, that you sent somebody to Japan to get some authentic sound in there. How much of what we're hearing is actually production sound? How much is then Foley that's brought in, especially because of how VFX heavy this gets in certain parts?
Yeah, I've been fortunate, or some might think unfortunate, that a lot of the higher end, I've done a lot of higher end production value television shows that have a lot of visual effects. Like me and Brandon did Lost in Space,
mm-hmm.
also together, and that was actually Scott Schofield, who's one of the producers, and it's like a lot of the same picture editors were on this project as that project. So we did have like an immediate kind of second hand with them for a lot of things. But, I lost my train of thought. What was your question again? I forgot where I was going.
Don't just keep going because this is interesting.
What was your question? Because
you were asking how much is sound effects versus the production.
Oh, yeah. So how much is it? Yeah, so... So since we do these shows that do have a lot of visual effects, we end up using a lot of ADR typically.
Mm-hmm.
So we end up with a lot of Foley and a lot of we do mostly what you're hearing is added. There is some production sound in there. Obviously, all the dialogue for the most part is production, but we do tend to split out as much as we can and replace a lot just because you need it to be a lot bigger, so that's going to translate to the music on this type of show where it's just a lot of big action. So, you have to create sounds that are bigger that are going to poke through the mix better. So there's a lot of Foley. There's a lot of background. You know, it is a different style of show in that respect, so there's a lot of sound that's played in this show, which is different than some shows. So
there is, and for like, I was talking with one of our colleagues. You know, Shaughnessy Hare and Brittany Ellis were our mixers on this, and it was their first time teaming up. They're great mixers. This is just their first time teaming up in this show. We've worked with both of them a few times, but Keiko driving the Jeep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have some Jeep production and that kind of stuff, which is in there, and it sounds good. But then Ben takes his sound effects and sound design pass and makes it super cool. And then we get to the stage, and then we're feathering in the music, we're feathering in the production, we're feathering in the ADR, and you wind up making that Jeep Keiko's character. The way she's driving it, we've just met her, so we've used some of these devices, like the Jeep, to introduce Keiko's character and how, who and what she really is. She's just not a, a scientist or a doctor. She's, you know, got her intense side, not afraid side. And, you know, throughout the series, we've done that in numerous things. You know, you meet Kurt Russell. Well, and the way he's driving the minivan, you get a sense of what his character is like.
And at the same time, you mentioned Kurt Russell, where we first meet him, and he's going through the Japanese garden, and he's cutting the bonsai trees, just tiny little snippets. You get as detailed as hearing the little cut. And that's so key because of the whole idea of Monarch and this place that he lives in. And I don't want, I'm purposely being evasive here because I don't want to be spoilery for anybody. But it just stands out in your mind, the one scene where Mai, who is now teamed up with Kate and Kentaro, and they're meeting Kurt's character of Lee, you know immediately, oh my God, sound is actually very, very important here from a story point. And but to hear that minutia of clipping the little bonsai, that and then contrasting that with what I had already seen in the first two episodes and the bombastic sound with monsters, I thought that was just spectacular.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean,
we do our best.
The monsters all came out so cool that it was, man, that mixture of how cool the visual effects team did and of the building of the creatures and then the sound design, I couldn't be more proud of this project.
The creature VFX is fantastic. And I'm curious, what elements did you actually use to create the sound of the monsters? The one in Alaska is beyond cool, visually and sonically.
Oh, great, good.
So I'm curious, what elements you brought in to create the sound of each monster? Because we've got that one, we've got a monster with the abandoned ship, which has its own distinct sound. We have the initial episode one, the G-Day, with the Godzilla monster, that has its own sound. So I'm curious about developing the actual sounds for the monsters. What are they a mix of?
Well, they're a mix of a lot of different things. I really took, as far as the basic sounds, I took a page from the original Godzilla movies, the remake, the 2014 movie Godzilla that E-Squared guys did. You know, I've watched a lot of the different things, techniques that they used and recording, and we mimicked a lot of those to create our own elements, to create, you know, to as basic building blocks for some of the creatures. You know, there's also typical elements in there, animal things, elephant trumpets and you know, lion growls, and all those kinds of elements are in there as well. The ice beast, Doris, as we like to call her, on the stage, you know, she, one of her really cool sounds was she has this kind of searching sound, like a, you know, kind of used it for like when she's searching for the party underneath the ice. You know, that was just this toad. It was a toad that was pitched down, and it just had the real interesting vibe. So I'm always trying to find little snippets of things that you know, that you build together. There's some sea lions in there. There's a walrus, a camel. There's a lot of different little snippets of things that are familiar, you know, and you blend them together and it becomes something else. So you're always looking for the emotional strings more than anything, I think, with creatures. You know, those are the things you want to tap into because that's what people relate to.
Well, you mentioned Doris and using the toad sound for when Doris is on top of the ice searching for some things below the ice. And it's almost, you do get a very emotional connection And even above ground, when we are with her above ground and she's going crazy, it's frustration. It's almost like a mother's frustration at her child screaming and yelling is the emotional connect heartbeat that you get. But you contrast that with the monster in the abandoned ship.
And the Iron Dragon.
And that is just beyond creepy. And what I found interesting about the dragon sound is it doesn't sound like what Paula Fairfield did for the GOT dragons. The Mother of Dragons sound is not used here.
Yeah, no.
That I found very striking. It's a whole new dragon sound that we have.
Yeah, we tried to, you know, start with elements that were similar in nature to what they'd used in the first films and for the Mutos and things, and that was kind of a basic, you know, that was kind of a, you know, like what did those things kind of sound like? And then we were, you know, using sounds that might give us a similar feeling or a similar vibe, but still being unique. I was going to say they were very, you know, legendary, and the producers, they were very, they were very conscientious that we maintain the original flavors, but yet that the creatures sounded different, that they didn't sound just like Godzilla, that they did sound different, so.
You're also layering in here, on top of monsters, on top of the music, your ambient elements of wind, storm, blizzard, you've got it all in there. But you also have ammunition, gunfire. All of that comes into play. Were you as specific with that as with creating monster sounds and ambient sound? Because you've got different types of armament happening here in what I've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, there's not that much gunplay in the series overall. What's there is, I think, in those first couple episodes, there's maybe a little bit more. There's not a, you know, it's not really that kind of a show. It's more, you know, I mean, the monsters are overwhelming, so it's and a lot of it's just the chase and the evade from the monster more than anything. So
yeah, we've got an atom bomb. I want to say
we do have an atom bomb.
I don't know how much we want to give away. We got an atom bomb in there.
Yeah.
We've got looks cool too. But now, how challenging is this, Brandon, when you're editing and you're trying to find all of your layers here? Because something that I have to commend you on is, even with everything that's happening, in the most dire of circumstances, we don't lose the dialogue. We can still hear the dialogue. And with as much happening sonically, with all those layers, is that a challenge? So to find that balance, so you can get everything in there, but still enable us to hear the dialogue, so we're not totally lost or trying to lip read?
It is a challenge, and it is a balance. And that goes back to Shaughnessy and Brittany. It's a collaboration. Scott Schofield is so clean. Cued in on the sound as well, the sound build, let's say. And, you know, you walk into these things, and music, Leo did a fantastic job with the music and the score, and music is carrying emotion, so you're pushing the levels on that, and then you're, you know, you want to hear the dialogue, but then there's a door opener closed that seems to be a storyline, so you want to push that. And it is a balance between deciding what you're lowering and what you're raising.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, it's a process, and we worked very hard at it. Really, it's a lot of watch downs and a lot of, this is great, now let's set it aside, go home for the night, come back the next day, and watch it again, and is the storyline still clear? Is the emotion still there? Like, it was a chore. And there is a lot of ADR. And the ADR isn't because it was bad production, per se. It's like some of the environments just lend themselves, because they're real environments, to obstacles that it's either going to be really hard to understand, or you do some looping and you know, added storylines and some of those things. But
mm-hmm.
We could still be mixing the show. Like, as mixers and sound people, you're never done. Like, you just let go of it at some point.
Yeah, you just told to stop. Yeah.
Yep.
Mentioning the music, Leopold Ross's score and the motifs that he has running, And we have recurrent musical motifs that I'm picking up in these first four episodes, and I'm sure it continues into the remaining six. So, and that is not a soft scoring either. This is not a lilting background. Oh, we have a babbling brook and we're walking in the woods. No, it's tension fraught, and it gets as loud and bombastic in its arrangement and instrumentation as the monsters are. And it's a really interesting parallel between the two, between the music and the monsters, and the volume of each of them and how they do go hand in hand. And I love how you've interwoven that together, Brandon. Really well done.
I mean, I wish it was all me, but it's not, man. It's the village. It really is.
Well, the village has done really well with this.
And everything's important. Everything's important. The bug that just flew by is important. Like, everything's important and everything's got its place. Which is featured at the moment. So.
And similarly, in the design and in the edit, you celebrate sound as well, such as in the ship. We hear the reverb, we hear the echo of emptiness in there, and the metal. I always love that when we lose so much excess or ambient or punctuated sound, and there's quiet, because that scares the bejeebus out of you.
Sure.
And
silence is scary.
Yeah, and that trek through the ship, it's the whole idea of the Hitchcockian idea of the unknown, and your imagination runs wild. But you strip out sound in there to a bare minimum, and it really serves as a wonderful balance and storytelling tool in how the plot's moving forward. And I really took note of that.
Well, we had great direction from the director and the picture editor on those episodes, so.
What is the most challenging aspect for the two of you on doing a show like this? And the fact that it's not a mini-series that comes in for two episodes, four episodes, but this is 10 episodes. I'm guessing if it does well enough, we may even see a season two coming down the pike. But, so what is the most challenging aspect of the sound work on a series like this?
Well, I think time is always your biggest enemy on any project, whether you're doing a film or TV, you know, so the schedule is going to determine, you know, a lot of what you're up against. You know, we're fortunate we can start early, but, you know, the schedule only allows, and the budget only allows so much time, so, you know, it's not a never-ending bucket.
You know, a series like this is like four or five feature films in my mind, and that's two years of work almost.
Wow.
A year and a half worth of work. But we don't, you know, we get less than half that time to do it in.
How?
Not to complain, though, because I'll tell you what, Peter Phillips, Legendary, and those guys, they are very supportive.
Yeah.
In budget and time, and Scott Schofield, like, they definitely...
they appreciate the work, and they realize
appreciate the work
goes into it.
Yeah, and they do the best they can to give us the time to do it. So I do give those guys mad props for.
Yeah.
How much time per episode do you get, or is this you're working on one episode and you're already moving into episode two or to episode three? Do you wrap one and move on to the other? You know, how is this time wise working?
Yeah, there is some of that. There's some overlapping. Typically, you know, we're doing a first pass, which is like maybe the first 3 days of our mix. Typically, these shows ran from, what, five, six days, you know, overall. You know, maybe there was one that was seven days, depending on the number of playbacks and whatnot. So we do a first pass. It's basically our first 3 days, and then we'll play back at the end of that. That third day we'll play back for ourselves and for the usually for the post producer or co-producer, whoever, you know, sometimes that might include a picture editor, sometimes not. So, and then, you know, then it gets put away for a few days. We might start on the next episode and then we'll come back to it,
and then we'll play back for producers, and then it goes back out. And in this case, since it's Apple's show, you know, we'll send it off to the studio, and then we'll get notes from the studio a couple days later. So there is a bit of a scheduling overlap, just in the nature of the way that you know, we were getting notes from the studio in this particular show. So
and visual effects. I mean,
and visual effects. Yeah, exactly. That's a constant update where you're always, because those are always just kind of rolling in, and you're going back and. Say, for example, so like we started with, I think, episode 7 or...
Well, we kind of temped episodes 1 and 2 with Matt Shackman.
Yeah.
We kind of temped those to get our footprint, and then what Ben's saying, right. Then we jumped to like 7.
7, because they had the least amount of visual effects. And
7, 8, 5.
Yeah, you know, like the ones that had the least amount of visual effects, those were the ones we kind of started on first, and then, you know... Then we'd go back, and then we'd start on the other episodes. So it just kind of depends. There's a lot of variables. Yeah. There's a lot of variables. A lot of it can be scheduling of you know, when the producers can watch it back. You know, some of it's visual effects. Sometimes maybe even music. You know, there's just a lot of moving parts, and you have to be pretty flexible. Which is another reason why I like to start early, is that we have more material prepped. So that we can bounce around a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
if needed.
Is there anything that you guys would like to see done with the sound in a series like Monarch that maybe has not been done?
Hmm. Jeez, I feel like we did everything. It's just because it was a lot of work.
The answer that you gave is absolutely perfect for anything that you'd like to hear in a series like this, and you've done it all. So I think that's a perfect way to end.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Good.
Enjoy it. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.